Good morning. Bob and Rosemary are in Sanger this morning. If you have not heard the news, they are celebrating his son, John. I believe it's John. Is it 25? Is that what it? 20. Uh-oh, here we go. 20 years that he has been preaching there at the church, and they were throwing a big surprise thing. I don't know if they actually pulled off the surprise because they had it changed about three different dates. Hopefully Bob and Rosemary were sneaking into town on Saturday to surprise him with a big fellowship and the activities today at church as the congregation honored him for his years of service as a gospel preacher there this morning. So Bob's there and I am here, and that's the story, and we're going to leave it right there. I want to talk to you this morning about moving closer, about the idea of getting closer to something instead of moving away from it. I sat in a class about 2 or 3 years ago, and I don't know how many leadership classes, many of you who have been in business or who've gone to training classes, have sat through leadership training classes, leadership classes, or read books on leadership. I used to buy all kinds of books on leadership when I was a kid. Thought I was going to be some kind of great. I want to be the president of the United States. I'm glad I'm not the president of the United States. I'll just say that right now. Didn't really know what that job entailed. But I loved all the kinds of, you know, reading stuff. And I don't know, it was about 2 or 3 years ago, I was sitting in a class on church leadership, actually, and this guy was talking about something, and he said something in passing that stuck with me that I guess I have heard, and I knew the principle, but I don't know that I ever just heard it flat out said before. And he was talking about a situation. He was talking about a problem that had arisen. They were at the church building, and a large group of people, we're going to have some issues here. There's some kind of a skirmish or not. Skirmish, scuffle, something, that someone was having some. Is my battery going in and out? I think it's okay. I think that's my cords going, my antenna. Here, let me take my coat off. Oh, see if that helps. I don't need my coat anyway. So anyway, he was talking about this issue, and he said, I was across the room, and I saw this thing start to develop across the room, and he said, I knew that as a leader, I was supposed to be moving towards such situations, not away from them. But he said everything in my body wanted to turn and run because I did not want, I just wanted to block it, he said. He said, but I knew as a leader, and that's what stuck in my head, as a leader, we are called to move toward situations and not away from them. And so today I want to talk a little bit about moving closer. Because the reality is we are all called to lead for Christ. Now I know we use that passage that says some are called for apostles and some are called to be teachers and some are called to be this and that. And we say, well, let me find my list. Mine's down here somewhere. I know I'm way down. Here I am. I'm way down. But the truth is the Great Commission was given for all. We are all called to lead people to Christ. That is a calling that is universal. And in that sense, we are all called to be leaders. And as leaders, as people leading other people to Christ, it is often important and imperative that we move toward situations that sometimes we just want to turn and run from. Yesterday was March the 18th. It was the 80th anniversary of the New London or the London school explosion. I came firsthand with that. I, like most Americans, had no idea about the London school explosion. Something that was not in my history book, and I never learned anything about it until I came to Russ County. 5 years ago, I was intimately involved in the 75th anniversary in regards with the radio station, some other things I was doing at the time, and I learned firsthand the tragedy of what happened on that day. And what still to this day perplexes me and just really I wonder in the psyche of people is how a town that lost nearly 300 people went silent for almost 50 years. It was such a tragedy, such loss, that the whole town just stopped talking about it. I spoke to a guy a couple years ago who was a survivor. He was actually in the elementary school when the high school and junior high exploded. But he was very, very young. And he said, I don't know if he was a kindergartner or something along the way, but he was, I guess, the youngest he could be, or he may not even been in school, but he was there when things happened. But his older sister died in the explosion. But it was such of a non-topic that he says years later, he had trouble even remembering that she existed. The pictures were not on the wall. The parents didn't talk about it. They never talked about how she died. And there are numerous occurrences of this where some kids who were very, very young never even knew they had siblings, or were born after the time, after the explosion, never knew they had older siblings who died in the explosion. The town just decided not to talk. And about 25 years ago, 30 years ago almost now, some people got together and said, we want to honor those that we lost. And they had their first gathering of people. It was kind of a small affair. And over the past 25, 30 years, it's grown to where people are now telling their stories and sharing. And if you talk to some of the survivors that are still there, there were some there yesterday. We were out there yesterday as a part of that event as well. And they tell you the healing has been tremendous. When we run away from things that we don't want, and I know there's reasons why. You could ask Chris. Chris could probably go into to hours of dissertation about why people do certain things because of the pain and the guilt and the things that go along with that. But in the ultimate, when we run away from things and they never get resolved, healing never takes place. And it's only when we turn around and face those problems head on that healing can occur. But that's not the way we are. I am horrible at this. I will be the first to admit I am an avoider, as much of an avoider as there can be an avoider, right? I mean, I do not like confrontation. I'll be straight up honest. If you don't want to talk to me, let's have a little conflict. I will never speak to you again. I should admit that, but that's probably true. I don't want to be that way, but that's the way I tend to be. That's something in my makeup says I just want to. You ask my wife. You ask my wife. Silent treatment. I can be real vocal, but when I don't want conflict. And what happens when we don't want conflict? It's like a sore. You know, if you just ignore the sore, it'll heal, right? No. It festers and gets this goofy green stuff and it starts oozing and it hurts. And then they come along and say, we got to cut your arm off. Right? Because you ignored it. I almost fell. You're watching me, I see it. Our job as Christians, our job is to move toward those issues, to move toward the things that kind of make us a little nervous. And you probably the same way. I don't think I'm the only one who likes to avoid things. I don't think I'm the only. I think it's just something innate about me. You probably are the same way in a lot of these situations. If you have if you work and you have a problem at the office, you tend to avoid that colleague. Just walk the other way to the water cooler instead of going past the office. Or the boss, you're like, I'm just going to avoid the boss. If you're a parent, you have kids, you probably have done this before. It's a whole lot easier to just go, you know what, just let them, instead of having to deal once again with the tantrum, you're in the grocery store and they, I want this. And you're like, no, you can't. You've had this, right? You've seen this. You've seen the mother and you're like, been there. And the mother says, here, shoves it in their mouth, let's go. Because it's easier, right? We avoid the actual issue. Maybe you have a grown child. A grown child that you know needs help, needs some guidance. But sometimes trying to give that has been so painful in the past. Sometimes trying to approach that subject one more time is just, it's better left not to do. This is the way we think. Sometimes we just cannot avoid these issues. If you have a, sometimes as a married couple, you've been there probably as well, if you have a husband or a wife, you say, I just don't want to deal with that issue one more time. I've had that fight enough. I'm going to just, let's walk past that issue. And that's great marriage therapy, right? Just not talk about the problem. Chris, am I right? That's wonderful, right? Oh yeah, because the problem just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then you're exploding over things that you're like, what happened? Am I the only one that's done this before? No? Yes? You've been there too. You've been there too. God calls us to move toward situations, not away. Toward those situations, not away. But our instinct is to run. Is to run. Kind of like this. I saw this this fun clip here. Conan O'Brien, he's like, oh! And then he... You can't do this as a TV network host, right? This is not good practice to keep your job. Something surprises you and... Yeah, we don't like that. Or, of course, this guy, and we all love this guy right here. When trouble happens, I'm running, right? And he just kept running. He ran to the end of the city. He ran to the end of the state. He ran all the way across to the water. When he got to the water, he got to the ocean, what'd he do? Turn around and run back the other way, right? We just like to run because we don't want to confront those issues. We don't want to confront those issues. God calls us to a better life. We often think that the only way to live our life, we can work out the best way. We know how to best work it. We know which way to work. And God says, you don't. I know what is best for you. And He calls us to a better life. I printed my sermon as well as put it on my iPad so that when the internet crashes, I still have it here. So if you see me referring to one or the other, that's what I'm doing this morning. I want to look at a passage because God answers these questions for us. When we say, you know, I just can't. It's not in me. I'm the Forrest Gump guy. I turn around and run. It's just natural instinct. When I see something that I don't want or I want to avoid, I avoid it. I can't. I can't approach those things. God says, you know what? You can. And He gives us some great examples and teaches us about how to do it. We're going to look at some of that today because He says, all who listen to me will live in peace, untroubled by harm, by the fear of harm. That's the life God calls us to. He calls us to life, to live life, and not just eternal life, but life abundantly. The one translation says life to the fullest. It's not just eternal life that He promises us someday, somewhere in heaven, but He promises us life to the fullest. But when we run from it, when we decide I'm going to choose what I want to do about it, and that's going to be run, we usually make the wrong decisions. And this really comes down to a whole discussion of what does God want for me? What does He want for me? Am I going to listen to Him because I trust in Him? Or do I rely on my own instincts, which more often than not get me into serious trouble? I won't say often than not, which always gets me into more trouble than I could have. We're going to look at a passage today that's pretty familiar to you, I would suspect. It's one that I'm sure you probably have read multiple times, and if not, this is a great time to look at it. It's in the Gospel of John, John chapter 4. It's the story of the Samaritan woman at the well. And we're going to read through this here. I know that's kind of small here, but we're going to read through this, and then we're going to stop and talk a little bit about this. So this comes from John chapter 4. This will be the NIV version here. But he had to pass through, this is Jesus, had to pass through Samaria. Now he came to a Samaritan town called Sychar, near the plot of Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, since he was tired from the journey, sat right down next to the well. It was about noon. Now, let me give you a little context here. Sychar is called Sikkim in the Old Testament, and we actually happen to be studying about that in our leadership Bible studies, and the elders and ministers are studying this right now. Joshua comes into the Promised Land. He crosses over the Jordan, and he arrives here at the Promised Land and says, look, I am going to give you all of this land. This is the land that you are inheriting from God. And he establishes this place as the capital of all of Israel, Sychem. Right? This is where Jesus winds up. The name has been changed, and the name has changed over time to Sychar, but this is that same town just outside where Jacob gives this land to Joseph, and by tradition he builds this well. And he comes to this well, as verse 7. A Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me some water to drink. For his disciples had gone off to the town to buy supplies. So the Samaritan woman told him, how can you, a Jew, ask me, a Samaritan woman, for water to drink? For Jews have nothing in common with Samaritans. And Jesus answered her, if you had known the gift of God and who it was who said to you, give me some water to drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Sir, the woman said to him, you have no bucket, the well is deep, where are you going to get this living water? Surely you're not greater than our ancestor Jacob, are you? For he gave us this well and drank from it himself, along with his sons and his livestock. And Jesus replied, everyone who drinks from this well of water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks from the water that I will give them, he will never be thirsty again. But the water that I give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up to eternal life. The woman said to him, sir, give me some of this water, so that I will not be thirsty and have to come here and draw water. He said to her, go and call your husband and come back here. The woman replied, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, right, you are when you said I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the man you're living with now is not your husband. This you have said truthfully. And then the woman changes the subject. She says, the woman says to him, sir, I see that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you people say that this place, the place where people must worship, is in Jerusalem. Jesus said to her, believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain, Mount Gerizim, or in Jerusalem. You people will worship what you do not know. You people worship what you do not know. We worship what we know because salvation is from the Jews. But a time is coming and is now here when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, and the Father seeks such people to be his worshipers. God is peace, is spirit, and the people who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. The woman said, I know that the Messiah is coming, the one called Christ. Whenever he comes, he will tell us everything. Jesus said to her, I, the one speaking to you, am he. Now, this is probably a very familiar passage, as we said. Let's go back a second. I don't want to put this one up here yet. Let's go back. Because I want to pull out a couple of things real quick. Just make a couple of points before we move on to the very last part of this. First of all, Jesus starts off this topic and breaks every rule. Okay? He is not the peaceful, wandering rabbi that just happens to sit down and have a conversation with this woman. Jesus is breaking every single rule in the book. He is a rebel. He is borderline blasphemous. He's going to be accused of this by the teachers of the Pharisees of the law. But he is talking to a Samaritan woman. He is alone with a woman, which is a no-no in this culture and time. He is talking to a Samaritan, which is a no-no in this time. They are dogs. They are not worthy to be associated with Jews. He starts off by asking her for a drink of water. He has no cup. He has nothing to drink from. What is he going to drink from? The cup that she has? That's not allowed. Samaritans and Jews cannot share cups. They cannot share dishes. He is breaking every single rule by sitting down and talking to this woman. And yet, he continues to talk to her, and he continues this conversation. He begins this conversation. The God of the world, the creator of all the universe, and he begins the conversation by asking for help. I think that's an important distinction. He doesn't start with her. But he starts with asking for something for him. And then he talks about living water. And living water is an important distinction. That's flowing water, active water. That is not water that's in a cistern or in a little pool. It is actively flowing. It's a spring, a well that is not catching water from the rain, but rather is producing water. And he references this living water. And then when the woman finds out who he actually is, and we're not reading all the way down through that, but when he finds out, she finds out who he is, she has a decision to make. And it's either to go on about her day, drawing water, getting the food ready, whatever she's about to do, or she's going to turn and run headlong into the situation. And that's exactly what she decides to do. As soon as she realizes who he is, she turns and runs back to the village and brings the people and says, "There is a prophet who told me things that he should not know about me. You've got to come see this man." And she starts to wrangle up people. We're going to skip a couple of paragraphs down because this is the part I want to focus on real briefly here before we finish. Because this is very interesting. He says to the apostles come back. And they say, they've gone to town to get some food. They come back, they realize he's been talking to this woman as she's running off. And they're like, "Whoa, she can't do this," but they're not going to say anything. Good apostles, not confront. They're just going to let it slide. And he says, and then they say something about food. And he says, "Look, I have food that you do not know anything about." So the disciples begin to say to one another, "No one brought him food, anything to eat, did they? Where's the food? Did he get food already?" And Jesus goes on because he's talking metaphorically and he says, "My food is to do the work, to do the will of the one who sent me and to complete his work." Don't you say there's 4 more months till the harvest comes? I tell you, look up and see, the fields are already white for the harvest. Jesus uses this as a teaching moment with his apostles, with his disciples and future apostles, when he says, "Look, I have food." He's talked about drink with the woman, and now he's talking about food with the disciples. And he says, "What sustains me, what keeps me going, is not food like fish and bread, but it's doing the will of my Father and completing his work." Jesus says, "What keeps me going is doing the will of my Father and completing his work." Later on, he's going to tell in John, he's going to tell the apostles that you too will take up my work. My work will be what you do. Truly, truly, John 14, "I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do." Over in Matthew, he also tells us as well, on the next verse there, Matthew 5 and 16, Jesus said, "Let your light shine before others so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." Jesus also lets us know in another passage that his work is glorifying the Father. That is the work that he came to do and the work that he accomplished on the cross, to glorify the Father. And we too will take up that work, he tells the apostles. You too. And it's not just for them, but it's for all of us. The work that we do is glorifying the Father. The question is, do we accept the job? Do we run from it? Or do we turn our face toward it and go headlong into it? Like every biblical, you pick a biblical hero, and that's the story of their life. That's the story of their life. From Abraham, who decides he's going to get up and, at the command of God, go to a new city. He doesn't even know where he's going. And if he doesn't run from it, he goes into it. Moses. Now, Moses runs. Moses gets confronted, but Moses runs. But eventually, Moses turns around and goes right back to Egypt, back to the Pharaoh, and confronts the prophet. Jonah turns around and runs.
And Jonah eventually turns around and goes right back to Nineveh, where God sent him to begin with. Caleb went right into the problem. He said, I've been there, I've seen the people, we can go back and we can take the land. Joshua did the exact same thing. It goes on and on and on. David shows up as a child, as a teenager, and says, what in the world are you guys doing? You guys are ignoring the elephant in the room, the giant in the field. Let's go after him. You can't ignore him. You've got to go after him. And he takes a stone and he kills the man. Peter denies Jesus three times. He tries to run and tries to hide. And yet, at the end, he becomes one of the most powerful leaders in the church in the early first century. Paul always took things head on. Always. He was going the wrong direction sometimes, did a little course correction, and he went right back to heading on right down the road, facing the problems that Jesus, that God, set out before him. What's interesting about all these men, especially the ones that ran first and then turned back around, what was the difference? What happened between the time that they ran and the time that they turned around and faced God up front or faced the issues for God? They had an encounter with God. They came face to face with the power and the deity of God in the burning bush, in the belly of the whale, on the road to Damascus, with Christ by the sea for breakfast. They had an encounter with the power and the majesty of God. And they turned around and they went forward. They moved closer. They took up the work to accomplish it. But the most important example for us is Jesus Christ himself. God created man, places him in a garden, in a relationship with him, and we do our very dead-level best to mess it up. And yet, throughout human history, God continues to reach out toward us, to reach out, to draw us back in. And he's more successful at times because we allow it, and then sometimes we still turn around and run, but it's not until Jesus Christ himself, with the fullness of deity and the fullness of man, come to earth itself and bridge the gap, bringing heaven down to earth and stand right there in our presence. Now, if that's not confronting, if that's not moving toward the problem, nothing else is. He comes and comes from heaven to earth and he stands much like Jesus and the Samaritan woman. Because actually in the story, we are the Samaritan woman. We are the Samaritan woman standing at the well between two mountains, Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, the Mount of Blessings and the Mount of Curse. The covenant right between them, cut between these two mountains where Joshua stood and said, this will be your land. Jesus is standing from heaven down to earth and says, I am bridging the gap. I am meeting you between curses and blessings. And I am asking you for a cup of water? And the question becomes, what do we do? And Jesus says, if you knew who I was, you would ask me for the water, and I would give it to you for eternity. And we have a decision to make. Do we turn and go on about our way, trying to dip our own water? Or do we run back to the village and tell the people of the Messiah that has come? He didn't criticize us, but we've been adulterous. We've slept around. We've had multiple wives or husbands. We're living in a broken world. We struggle with addictions. We struggle with relationships. We struggle with our own passions. We struggle with all kinds of things. And yet Jesus Christ meets us there and says, ask me for the water. And when we find out who he is, we have a choice to be transformed by that message into something that he has always intended us to be, or to go on dipping water? To move closer or to move away? Samaritan woman, of course, she chooses to move closer and she takes off running for the village. Where are you going to run? This week we stand on the cusp of an amazing opportunity. This church has positioned itself to move closer to the city of Henderson this week. There has been 2 or 3 months worth of work behind this, getting ready for what starts tomorrow, which is getting out of the building and walking into the lives of people of Henderson. You are doing a great job. That is to be commended. Do you know why we're having the campaign this week? Do you know why you're having the campaign this week? Because there was another congregation that said, we're not sure we're ready to take that step yet. We don't really want to step into lives of people that we're not real comfortable with. We're not really ready to step into lives of people who are hurting from addiction or hurting from alcohol or hurting because their marriages are broken or hurting because of a number of other problems. We're not quite ready to do that yet. And so there was a free week. And the elders said, we are. And since that time, you have stepped up and said, we are ready to do this. Let's take that step and let's move into people's lives. Let's run back to the village like the woman in Samaria and say, I have found the Messiah. He knew things about me that I never told him. He's transforming my life. Come along with me. That is moving toward. Now I understand that may be a big step for some of us. As a congregation, that's where we're heading. Individually, sometimes we have a little bit of a problem getting on board all the time. So I'm going to encourage you this week to take small steps. Big ones if you can. Big ones if you can. How did the woman run back? Why did the woman have confidence to run back to the village and say, Christ is here, the Messiah is here? Because he gave her something that she had never had before. Faith. And I hope that you've got that as well. This week I want to encourage you. Take a step that you would not have taken before. Move closer to someone in a way that you would not typically do because it scares you. But know that you can do it because the Spirit of God moves within us as believers. The Spirit of God, Christ himself, is not going to let us go astray. He's not going to let us get lost or have problems. He's going to be there for us in whatever happens. And that's the faith that we need to have. I encourage you this week to take that step closer. Maybe that's knocking doors for the first time when you would say, I am never knocking a door in my life. Maybe that's saying, you know what, I'm going to pray for someone because I just haven't done that. Maybe that's actually asking for apologies from someone else. You know, apologizing to someone that you've offended in the past and you just don't want to confront that situation and say, would you please pray for me? I want to do better. There's 1,000 different ways that you can take that step closer. And there's a lot of opportunities this week to do just that. I want to encourage you to let God move this church closer to this community and break the cycle of sin that hurts us all. Because he can do it. He can do it. If you have never accepted that, you may not be a believer. You may not have put on Jesus Christ in baptism before. We would like to help you with that. That's part of what this week is all about. And if you're not there yet, we want to help you any way we can. Any way we can. Would you commit with me this week to move closer to the problems, to move closer to the situations that make us a little uncomfortable, not to not talk about it, but actually take up that calling of God, take up that call to be a leader and lead people to Christ. Would you do that with me this week? Yes? Maybe? Yes, I'm a little afraid, but yeah, I can probably do that. There are people that'll hold your hand the whole way. That's what we're here for. That's why we're family. That's what the church was built for. Let's move closer to the people in pain. If there's anything that we can do for you, we want to do that today as we stand and sing.